As the GOP convention gets started under very unusual circumstances, we thought it might be a good idea to focus on its host state, Minnesota, on this week's States of the Union. And joining me now to discuss what matters to voters in the land of 10,000 lakes is Pat Doyle, a reporter for the Star Tribune. I'm pleased to welcome him to the show today. Hi, Pat.
Hi.
Minnesota has a strong progressive tradition that's given us Hubert Humphrey, Eugene McCarthy, Walter Mondale, Paul Wellstone. Do you think that comes from the Scandinavian heritage of many Minnesotans?
And Orville Freeman, who was the agricultural secretary under President Kennedy. Yes, there's a strong Northern European flavor and strain here that I think many people regard as being liberal and some critics call socialist. Should note that although Minnesota has become increasingly a purple state over the years, it's been a long time since it's elected a Republican as president, voted for a Republican as president. You have to go all the way back to 1972 when Richard Nixon beat George McGovern.
On the other hand, the last time a state elected a Democratic governor was 22 years ago.
That's right. We don't know what would have happened in 1998 if Jesse Ventura hadn't jumped into the race. He kind of threw things a kilter. But yes, there seems to be a kind of a balance of power here. If you're looking at the current situation, we have Governor Pawlenty, a Republican, one of the people who was on a short list for John McCain's running mate. He's the governor, and on the legislative side, both houses are controlled by the DFL, which is the local term for Democrats here. It stands for Democratic Farm Labor, which I think you mentioned at the outset.
Yeah. Well, I've always wondered about how the party got that name, unlike other places. Is it a reflection of the state's economic makeup? Because, yes, I see farmers and unions represented there, but what about all the taconite miners?
Oh, they probably should have added something saying farmer, labor, and taconite miner, or at least miner, in there, because the Iron Range is a major, major factor in the Democratic Party here. It's probably not as big as it was 20 years ago, because the downturn in the taconite industry meant a lot of people left that region. But yes, northern Minnesota, home of the Mesabi Iron Range, has always been a big player in Democratic politics, and they play tough. They're bare-knuckle players, kind of like Chicago Democrats are.
It's the area that gave us Bob Dylan.
That's right, Hibbing, Minnesota. Although I don't think he spent a lot of time there. He quickly pulled up and moved to the University of Minnesota, where he was singing on the West Bank of the Mississippi here before heading to New York.
You mentioned James Georgianos, Jesse Ventura, who was elected governor in 1998. Would that have indicated that the state was changing a bit, that independents were going to be playing more of an important role in elections than they had in the past?
Yes, definitely. The Independence Party is a major league party here, albeit one that doesn't do as well as the Republicans and the Democrats. Ventura really tapped into some discontent in sort of the ex-urban Twin Cities area. Kind of tapped into people in their 20s and 30s, mostly male, not surprisingly, who were kind of disaffected from the Democratic Party. Probably shared some of the social issues that the Republicans shared involving guns and abortion and so on, but at the same time weren't really connected with the Republicans either. They were working class guys, and Ventura really knew how to appeal to those people. He was a terrific candidate. I covered him on election night in 98, and he was an exciting campaigner. He was far less exciting and far less effective as a governor. He basically was pretty much at war with the legislature. Of course, it didn't help that he was an independent and didn't have any allies. But he was a colorful character. And in that sense, he's part of, a tradition here. I remember back in 1990, there was this frizzy-haired college professor who was running around, running for Senate, and he was waving his hands and arms and very excited. And my initial reaction when I saw him and heard him was, there's no way this guy can be elected to the U.S. Senate. But Paul Wellstone was elected to the U.S. Senate and went on to serve a couple terms before dying in the plane crash.
In the case of Jesse Ventura, he beat Norm Coleman in that gubernatorial election, which is interesting because Norm Coleman is now the senator and facing a challenge from Al Franken. But Norm Coleman was a member of the DFL, wasn't he at one point?
Yes, he was. And there are still many people here, Democrats, of course, who resent the idea that he switched parties. He worked for Hubert Humphrey III, known as Skip Humphrey, when Skip was the Attorney General here. And Norm was Senator Coleman, was then known as just Norm Coleman, Assistant Attorney General. He was pretty accessible, and then he went on to run for mayor of St. Paul. But people still resent, at least Democrats still resent, that he switched parties.
Well, he said
so at a time.
Do we know why he switched parties?
Oh, I think it was just a pure hard-boiled political calculation. Senator Coleman is a very, very sharp politician. You know, after he took office, he kind of, in the beginning, was part of, I think, the Bush administration's attack on Kofi Annan, the former UN secretary, and kind of took the point position there, going after involving some of the scandals at the time. But he's really backed away from that now. He's moderated his positions a great deal on health care and so on, which has made it more difficult for Franken to take a poke at him. And so he's always been very very sharp about attacking in various directions to recognize where the public's going. And I think he did it at a time when Republicans were insurgent and seemed to be positioned to remain so for a long time. Of course, that's changed now, and it's given Franken a real opening here. He's had a number of foibles and problems, and he's been attacked pretty aggressively by the local Republican Party. But recent polls show him either slightly behind Coleman or in a neck-and-neck race.
Norm Coleman said last month that he wouldn't be attending the convention this year if it weren't in his home state. Is that a reflection of his attempt to remain above the Republican problems, above that fray?
I think so. I think that he can read the poll figures as well as anybody, and I think he wants to stay away from that.
Well, Al Franken, everybody assumed, would be doing very, very well. What have been his problems? Is he being portrayed as a carpetbagger, even though he is from Minnesota?
Well, he left Minnesota a long time ago, and I don't know that that's a big problem for him. As much as it's very difficult, it turns out, and maybe this shouldn't be a surprise, for a satirist with no real political experience to immediately run for one of the top jobs in the country. And that is the kind of thing that bothers Minnesotans a little bit, I think, about him, is that he really doesn't have any political experience. And yet, he's doing well against Coleman. I think it's in part because, from everything I've heard, he connects very well with average voters. I mean, he doesn't have a particularly good relationship with the press corps, but when he goes out on the hustings, people seem to like him. And he connects that way. He also has a tremendous amount of money to spend. And he's raised about $13 million now to Coleman's $11 million. He's done this through sort of grassroots, internet-type campaigning for money, the same kind of thing that Barack Obama has done. But he's also relied very heavily on money from outside of Minnesota. I did a story a few months ago about how about three-quarters of Franken's money came from outside of Minnesota compared to about 60% of Coleman's money. And so that's helped him enormously. The only problem is he's also spending it at a much higher rate. He's got about $2 million left to spend between now and the end of the campaign, assuming he doesn't raise a lot more money between now and then. And Coleman has roughly $7 million left. So that's an awful lot of money for the incumbent to spend on TV commercials in the last few weeks.
Well, one of the Coleman ads, or there's an ad anyway, about Franken's stances on taxes, saying that Al Franken wants to raise taxes despite not paying his own taxes for 17 years. Has that been a major storyline in this campaign?
It was. It's getting less attention here now because, we did stories on it earlier in the spring when the Coleman camp and Republicans in general were pushing that issue very hard. I think the ads are an attempt to remind people of all that. But the deal there is that Franken did pay taxes. He paid them not where he was supposed to pay them. primarily in other states. This goes back to his days when he was a comedian and traveling around the country. And I think the initial disclosure of this had some impact, but again, it appears that when Minnesotans had some time to digest the issue a little bit, they seem to have concluded not that he's a tax cheat, but that he was just sloppy in his reporting, and it hasn't hurt him all that much. Another issue that he's been hit hard on is his kind of raucous body behavior back in the days when he was a satirist, working for Saturday Night Live or doing other comedian work. And the local GOP here has made a big deal about a Playboy column that Franken wrote back in 2000, and also about a kind of a raunchy skit that never ran, I understand, but it was one that Franken had worked on for Saturday Night Live and was doing that gig. There are TV commercials that are playing on that now. One has a group of three or four bowlers, kind of Joe Sixpack guys, sitting around in a bowling alley and talking about how they heard that Al Franken can get away telling all these dirty jokes, and gee, wouldn't it be nice if they could do that in their workplace? They'd be fired. Maybe they should quit and go run for U.S. Senate, that kind of thing. So they've made hay with that a little bit. But again, the polls show that it's a very competitive race. A poll by the local Minnesota public radio station a couple weeks ago showed it neck and neck, Franken 41, Coleman 40%. About three quarters of the people who responded to this poll were thought that the country was on the wrong track, and about half of those people said that they were Franken supporters.
My guest is Pat Doyle, who's a reporter for the Star Tribune. We're talking about Minnesota in today's State of the Union. Minnesota, of course, being where the Republican convention is being held, a much more limited Republican convention than anybody had imagined just a week or so ago. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. Why do you think the Republicans chose the Twin Cities? Is it because of Tim Pawlenty?
Could have been. I think, though, probably a bigger reason is that the Twin Cities in Minnesota were considered kind of a state that's in play, even though it has not elected a Republican president in a long time. It's in the upper Midwest, shares some values with Wisconsin and Iowa, which are also states that are very much in play. I think that political dynamic was probably a bigger issue than Pawlenty.
Well, why is it in play? Is Minnesota doing better than some other states?
I think it's doing better than some other states, but the general kind of malaise that you hear about the economy in the country is something that you hear here in Minnesota as well. It's probably just not to the same degree. It's, again, a state that, because of the independent nature of the voters, people willing to elect Jesse Ventura, the fact that Governor Pawlenty is a Republican and has done well here. He won in 2006, which was a very bad year for Republicans nationwide. All of those things, I think, really encourage Republicans that this state could be taken. John Kerry won it by a very narrow margin back in 2004. And I think when they picked Minnesota, though, it was also before things started to deteriorate more in the economy. So I don't know if they had to do it over again, they would still pick the same place.
Is Governor Pawlenty popular in the state?
Yeah, he has a pretty good approval rating. I think the most recent one I saw was 55% approval rating. He's, having said that, he's won his two terms by very narrow margins. He won by about 1% back in 2006. And that was in a three-way race. He's never won a majority of the vote. And again, that's partly because there's been independents running who siphon off 5-6 percentage points. But yes, I think he's generally popular.
In 2006, the DFL did quite well. It took over control of the House. It had already had control of the state Senate.
That's right.
And it elected a senator by 20 points. So, and also Minnesota is home to Ralph Ellison, the first Muslim member of Congress who represents the most heavily Democratic district in the state. Is he a reflection of the diversity of the state? Because he's not Scandinavian, as far as I know.
Not the last time I checked. Well, yeah, he's representative of a changing demographic in the Twin Cities. I live in his district in South Minneapolis, and what you're seeing is, and this goes back probably 20, 25 years, increasing immigration, first of all, from Southeast Asia. Twin Cities has one of the largest Hmong populations in the country, large Vietnamese population. And in more recent years, you're seeing an increasing African population, Somali and Ethiopian. And it's not surprising that they'd be reflected in the political structure. One of the state senators is a Hmong. So I think, yes, he reflects that, although it's safe to say this is still very, very, it's true to say that this is a very, very white place. And in that sense, you know, Keith Ellison is something of an anomaly. He did not really catch the kind of heat here that I think he caught in other places for his swearing-in ceremony. And I think it's probably because people just sort of took it for granted that he would do that.
Are the suburbs now keys to understanding Minnesota politics?
Increasingly. I mean, that's that area, the purple area, that helped vet Jesse Ventura back in 98. And these are people who could go either way. A lot of them seem to have characteristics that would make them very, very appealing to the Democratic Party. But there's a lot of things they don't like about the Democratic Party. They tend to be social conservatives. It's a demographic that you're seeing elsewhere in the country. It's not so much upper middle class suburban, but more middle, you know, working class suburban. And I think that they are a pivotal group of people.
But I assume that Minnesota is like other states where the rural areas are more conservative than the urban areas.
Yeah, that's true. And one kind of difference there might, again, be the Iron Range, where you get very liberal thinking in terms of economic issues. And that's union country up there. And yet that also is a place where social conservatives do well. So if you're going to run up there as a Democrat, abortion is an issue, probably less of an issue than bread and butter issues, but an issue nonetheless. See a lot of people.
Go ahead.
Go ahead. You see a lot of people from that area who are Democrats who are very moderate to even conservative on social issues, but sort of traditional Democrats on bread and butter issues.
Does infrastructure continue to be a big issue in the state after the collapse in last year of the I-35 West Bridge? The Democrats mentioned it over and over again during their convention last week.
Yeah, I think it's a very big issue. It has been for a long time. In the aftermath of the 35W collapse, there was a big move by the DFL party and the legislature to try to finally succeed at what they had failed to do for so many years, and that was to raise the state gasoline tax. And Governor Plenty at first indicated that he might be receptive to that idea, later backed away from that. There was a big fight over it. The legislature approved a gas tax increase. The governor vetoed it. And that veto was overridden by the legislature with a great deal of help from suburban Republicans. There was a handful of them who really tipped the balance there. And that's an example of how the suburbs can make a big difference. But, yeah, I think that the issue kind of resonates beyond the 35W bridge itself. What you heard during this whole debate during the legislative session was that the bridge collapse was sort of depicted by at least Democrats as kind of a symptom of a bigger problem.
And the blame was laid on the governor or on the federal government?
Well, the Democrats laid the blame on the governor because the governor had vetoed previous gas tax increases. And so the implication, of course, on the part of by the Democrats was that but for that kind of veto, maybe we would have better roads and bridges. Now, no one went so far as to say the governor's veto somehow contributed to the bridge collapse, but it became, more of a metaphor for broader road problems.
Now, Pat, we have just about 35 seconds left, and the convention has been cut back. Will there be an impact on the host city if parties are canceled and the convention takes on a more somber and serious tone?
Oh, I think so. St. Paul has for months now been sort of preparing itself and sprucing up with the expectation that this convention would run its course like all conventions, and that a lot of people would be out and about spending money in bars and restaurants and having a generally good time. You know, some of the bars are open till 4 o'clock in the morning, and they had to pay an extra fee in order to keep those hours. So there's no doubt about it. It'll be a disappointment to some of the local businesses here if it's cut short.
And do you think that it still will have some kind of an effect on the election? Will there be a pro-Republican bounce because the convention is being held in St. Paul?
Boy, I don't know. It could, you know, there was talk early on that maybe...
Actually, I'm going to have to wait for that answer because we've run out of time. I'm so sorry, Pat. Pat Doyle, reporter for the Star Tribune, talking to us about Minnesota on today's States of the Union segment. Thank you so much.
Thank you.